Here, Tave Fashe Drake. If you missed any of the show, visit stageandstudio.org, kbu.fm/stageandstudio, and you can download shows on iTunes. Don't forget to like us on facebook.com/stage, the letter and studio. Tweet me at stage, the letter and studio. Till next time, I'm D. May Roberts.
Ow.
See ya.
When I was a girl, I had a favorite story of a meadowlark who lived where the rivers wind. Her voice could match the angels in its glory, but she was blind.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. My name's Tave Fashe Drake, and this is Susanna Mars singing a song called Meadowlark. We just heard her voice on Stage and Studio with D. Mae Roberts. It's such a beautiful voice. Stage and Studio was made possible by KBOO members and support from PD Expendables, Stage and Studio Supplies. PD Expendables sells and rents to film and theater production, from gel and globes to paint and lights. Featuring the latest Airy LED lighting, they can be reached at 503-887-5880 or their online store at pdexpendables.com. Stick around. Up next is Art Focus with Eric Bartels. He speaks to the project manager of the historic Black Williams Project, highlighting the history of the African American community in North and Northeast Portland. Thank you for listening. You're listening to KBOO.
Hi, my name is Eric Bartels, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO-FM Community Radio. Earlier this month saw the unveiling of the historic Black Williams Project in North Portland, a series of installations along North Williams Avenue designed to highlight and honor what was once a vibrant African-American community in that part of Portland. We are delighted to have with us today one half of the husband-wife team which created that installation, Kayeen Talton Davis. Kayeen, welcome and thanks for being here.
Thank you.
When did you first learn about the historic Black Williams Project?
We first learned about it in the summer of 2014 when one of the members of the selection committee dropped off some information to us. We were at our shop, which was located at 3940 North Williams, working as Screw Loose Studio and Soapbox Theory, and the application or the general information was dropped off by one of the committee members. I can't remember at this point. But the information was dropped off, and we looked it over. And initially, we were asked if we wanted to be on the selection committee. And we said, no, we want to apply.
Was the intention... So you were not given the information because you and your husband are artists?
No.
Or so that you could sort of participate or compete for the opportunity.
Initially, it was because we were Black business owners still in the neighborhood, and it hadn't gelled in anybody's mind to invite us to apply at that point.
Is it fair to say that you were both enthusiastic about
definitely.
The prospect of participating or...
Yes, definitely. We both grew up in Northeast Portland. Our families are still there. And then, as I said, we had a thriving business at that point on the street as well.
I should give you a chance to talk a little bit about Screw Loose Studios and
Soapbox Theory.
So
Screw Loose Studio is my husband Cleo's business, doing screen printing, banners, stickers, all kinds of different graphic design and printing work. And his family owned that property, or still owns, rather, the property, and has since the 90s when it was a restaurant. And Soapbox Theory is the business that I started, and I do graphic design as well, mainly for African-American communities. I actually have my own line of products focused on children, making sure that they have positive and uplifting images.
Okay. You and your husband, as you said, grew up in North and inner Northeast Portland. What did you know about the history of the area growing up? Was all of what you came to, or most of what you came to find out in the sort of in undertaking this project already known to you, or was there much that you didn't know as a kid?
I knew a lot about it from growing up there, but mainly because my grandmother lived a couple blocks over from Williams. My dad grew up in the neighborhood, and so I got to hear all of his stories, as many fathers do, tell their stories again and again and again. But I definitely got to know some of the history that way. And for Cleo, his mother grew up just a block off of Williams as well. So it's those stories that you get from your parents and your grandparents about growing up for that particular era that was the main focus, so like the 40s, 50s, into the 60s and 70s.
By way of background, that area became a vibrant African-American community in large part because during World War II, workers came from other parts of the country. Some 40 to 50,000 came to work in the shipyards in Portland, about half of them African-American, if I have the figures more or less right.
That's a large portion. That North Portland, especially along North Williams Avenue, actually started with the black community around 1920 when the Broadway Bridge opened. So initially, the area that is now the Memorial Coliseum, it's still the Rose Quarter to me, but the Moda Center, that whole area at the base on the east side of the Broadway Bridge was a black community. It saw some of the first and largest black churches, businesses. A lot of the jazz clubs were down there.
Portland was well known as a jazz city.
Mm-hmm. And so then with the coming of World War II and the shipyards, that's when it really kind of grew a lot more. And then again with the flood of Vanport is when the folks that were out there moved in to North Portland.
A large scale housing development out near the what's now Portland Meadows or
Delta Park,
right, more or less. You're sort of a generation removed ish from that sort of heyday of the neighborhood. What was your experience? Did it remain a center of African American culture to perhaps a lesser extent when you were growing up?
I would say yes. For me personally, I ended up going to Harriet Tubman Middle School. And so with getting to know friends and their families and the stories of their families, as you do in middle school, a lot of that was still vibrant in the area. People's uncles and aunts and parents owned stores, and they were there after school, or you would go over to somebody's house and you'd walk around the corner to the store, whatever it was. And then also still seeing even into the early 2000s, seeing some of the changes as business owners and seeing what was going on, there was that last little bit of vibrancy, of energy that was left, and you saw it. We saw it very quickly dissipate.
We should talk a little bit about the installation itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. I walked it recently. It has a kind of a lighthearted feel. It's colorful.
Mm-hmm.
Just the idea that as you walk along, you're picking up new bits of information as you go along.
Mm-hmm.
But it also tells. There was some journalism that went into creating the installation.
Mm-hmm.
Was that you? Did you sort of solicit information from other places? Did you have to do a lot of research, more research maybe than you expected to?
We did. We talked to one big resource that we used was the Oregon Black Pioneers. They did a lot of research for us. And then also well, not for us, but we used their research, and then also went to the Rutherford Archive down at Portland State University. And then Cleo, my husband, also spoke with various families, especially those that were highlighted, or people who were associated with the organizations that were highlighted. So we got a lot of firsthand information, firsthand pictures, things that we didn't have to copy from an additional source, and people were excited to share those stories.
Why do you think that is?
I think because at a certain point, when all of the physical representation of your history is disappearing, you have to share that information somehow. And even if it's with your own family members, again, people tend to get tired of hearing the same stories over and over again within your family. So when you find someone new who's excited about it and is going to make sure that it is something that becomes well known and is shared so that it won't disappear, so that history and information won't disappear, I think that's exciting for anybody.
What can you say about the responsibility you felt? This is an important story, and we'll explore that some more. But was that sense of a little bit of a sense of duty already in place, or did you feel called at another level to get the story right, not miss anything?
Definitely. I think one of the biggest things that Cleo loves to say is that we would have done this for free. And I, of course, always tell him, not exactly, but the passion, definitely. It's something that's within us, and we wanted to make sure that it was done right. And of course, I'm sure there are other artists who could have done a good job, but for us and the vision that we had for Williams, we wanted it to be more than just some kind of essentially a tombstone on the community. And so often that's what these kind of memorial things end up being. It's just basically, here lies the African American community of North Northeast Portland, the inner city. We didn't want to do that. We wanted to make sure that there was life and something to create a opportunity and invitation for the Black community to come back.
At this point, invitations into that part of Portland are becoming a little bit more exclusive, mm-hmm. that the economics in that part of Portland have changed, continue to change. Mm-hmm. It's becoming a more and more upscale part of the city. How do you ensure that it doesn't become another Pearl District? Or is that okay? And how do you ensure that business owners of color, business owners of all stripes, have an opportunity in that neighborhood, or maybe any neighborhood?
Right. One of the things that we're looking at doing in the project, or I'm sorry, not looking at doing, but one of the things we're doing with the project is making sure that we are highlighting that Williams was a center of Black commerce, and making sure that Black African American owned businesses are still able to participate in the commerce that goes along Williams. We are doing that through installing a kiosk. So we have the 30 signs, the 10 sets of tiles, and then we have a kiosk that's going in on Cook and Williams that will be highlighting various local Black artists, various local Black-owned businesses, essentially creating a directory and one, essentially creating a publicly accessible directory that's right there on the street as people are learning more about the art project and about the different pieces that we've put together. We want to make sure that businesses and people that have been pushed out by the gentrification, that they are able to still benefit from what they had. So often we do end up with locations that say, well, you know, this is great, we're improving the community, it's looking good. Everything was just torn up before. It was blighted. But then the people who come in don't realize that some of that was done purposely by the city, other organizations, and so on, where in order to drop property value and be able to sell it to developers and so on and so forth. They also don't realize the history of an area. It got really rough. I don't know if that's quite the right word, rough, irritating for us being in our shop on Williams and having people who obviously hadn't been in the area for even a year yet, looking at us like, what are you doing here? Oh, and asking us, oh, well, where are you from? Here. And it just got to be a very, very odd feeling. And so that's going back to the question about how did we, you know, why was this so important to us, or what was the kind of demand, our internal demand on this? We had to do this. We really had to do this. And even if another team had been selected, we probably would have been asking them, hey, you want some help?
What are the issues? What helps me as a African-American business owner, or business owner of color, ensure that I have the same opportunity as everyone else?
Pedaling back to how the project started, I think what was going on, I think it was 2011, that the idea was floated of turning Williams into a bike street, 100% bikes. And the community had basically had enough of the city coming in and saying, this is what we're going to do. These are the changes that we're going to make. And that's what the initial committee,
This is the 27-member committee.
Yeah, this is the initial one that ended up giving the recommendation to PBOT to put together an additional committee to commemorate the African American history of the area. And I think that gave the city an opportunity to really listen, as opposed to just saying, okay, we're here, we're having a meeting, and not do anything about it. One thing that I've always personally questioned is, why do a lot of these meetings happen either at times where people are working or at times when people can't find childcare, especially when it's supposed to be community-based? We have these long, big meetings and people aren't able to attend them. So anyway, that's just a side note. But I think that that's an opportunity, and it's something to look at for future projects, is really looking at not only what money can be made, but what kind of community can be helped, what kind of community can be built, or even, I almost want to say, resurrected. Because when you have community members who have lived in and along North Williams for 50, 60 years, and they have had more problems with the bars that have gone in the last 10 years than they ever had with all of the supposed blight and gang and hood, etc. issues that were going on, then there's an issue. There's a real issue in what is being brought into the community.
You and your husband both left Portland for a time, mm-hmm. as in pursuit of your education.
Yes. One thing, you know, I always say is that I never realized how green Portland is. I mean, and that it's one of those big, huge, obvious things, but it's not that obvious until you leave. When you live on the I-5 corridor and you're between Portland and Seattle, they're green. And then you go back east somewhere and you have these huge buildings that are made of stone that have been there for hundreds of years. It puts a lot into perspective as far as how young Portland is and how many issues maybe haven't been dealt with as well. Also, I was in Pittsburgh, And there are some really poor areas in Pittsburgh. And it made me realize, as well as some of the other East Coast cities that I visited while I was out there, but it made me realize that Portland, while it has poorer areas, it doesn't have slums. It doesn't really truly have what the kind of absolute despair built into a neighborhood the way that I've seen back east. And I think that allows for maybe some space to grow here. So when there were areas of Portland that were considered blighted and this horrible gang infested areas and so on, and you've been somewhere else where it's absolutely ridiculous, you come back and you see that Portland is really, you wonder what's going on here, that if it's on a scale of, if the scale is 1 to 10, and you look at some of these places back east or maybe down in LA where they're at 1, and 10 is the just epitome of a great neighborhood and you have green grass growing and so on and so forth, Portland's poorer areas were like at a 6, maybe even a 7 compared to what's going on elsewhere.
And yet it is an issue. Mm-hmm. There are issues in Portland around making space for communities of color,
right,
for new communities.
Mm-hmm.
How are we doing? It's not uncommon to hear people. We know that Portland, like other cities,
right,
in the Northwest, Vancouver, Seattle, there are not large African-American communities.
Correct.
In any of these cities, really.
Mm-hmm.
Are we making space for different communities, for our communities of color and other communities?
I can't really say. I don't think that would be, to me, I don't think it would be a yes. I think it's more of a, I think what Portland is and what Portland has and is inviting is geared towards what is the creative, definitely the creative industry, which is good. That's the industry I'm in. But what it doesn't necessarily reflect or invite is diversity. I have a lot of people that I know, a lot of friends who've moved here or still elsewhere, and they're, you know, they always ask, are there black people in Portland? Because that's how Portland is represented outside of Portland. And that doesn't bode well for getting any additional diversity here.
So the issue is maybe less about whether communities that are already here are being served, but rather are we going to attract new communities, the people that would build new communities, whether they are ethnic communities or LGBT communities? Does Portland have an image problem more than it has sort of problems on the ground with regard to race?
I think the problems on the ground beget the image problem, which begets the problems with the image. Again, I'm sorry. The problems on the ground beget the image problem, which begets the problems on the ground.
Creates more problems on the ground.
Yeah, because if you're not recognizing the community that's here, and you're pushing them out and then inviting more people that don't reflect the communities, well, then now you've doubled up on your issues.
One thing that occurred to me was we talk about communities. It is lamentable that we lost what was once a sort of vibrant, close-knit community.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also an evolution in which as people move up the scale, they tend to disperse a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we're seeing more and more is different mixed communities in different parts of the Portland area, which is mm-hmm. something that was not seen
right.
a generation or two ago. Is that a good thing? The fact that there are African-American families in Southwest Portland or mm-hmm. far Southwest Portland, suburban Southwest Portland, or in East County or increasingly mm-hmm. in East Portland, are there opportunities there for sort of new communities, new kinds of communities?
Right. What I would venture to say is that looking at as the communities are integrated, shall we say, especially with those who would be middle class, upper middle class, and so on, it's always great to get to meet new people. However, when you are one of the one or two people that represent your background and culture and you walk into school, it feels really off. You don't feel like you are represented. You don't feel like you can connect with anybody. And it takes that additional time to get settled in. And you also stand out more within your classes. And if the teachers are already having whatever issues they're having, then it just gets it multiplied, especially if teachers have never been exposed to somebody with your background before, or even somebody who looks like you with your background. And obviously, that doesn't mean that your background, because you're a minority or a person of color, Black, Asian, Hispanic, any of those, that doesn't mean that you have a bad background. It's just that they don't know what to do with you. And not all teachers and not all communities are able to reach out and work together in order to build. And you can be as accepting as is possible, but until you get some kind of additional representation, it doesn't feel like you fit.
It's a slow process.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a slow process.
Right.
If communities of color are sort of growing and mm-hmm. different parts of the city or the Portland area, that's going to be a sort of evolutionary process.
Right.
You're not going to get heavy concentration of mm-hmm. Latinos or African Americans or anyone else
right.
in places that were nearly entirely white
mm-hmm.
up until a generation ago.
Right.
But it does seem to suggest a growing presence of mm-hmm. different communities in different parts of the area.
Right.
It seems like a silly question. What role can the artist play in sort of creating space for all members of any community? It's a silly question because you've already shown us that we now have the Historic North Williams Project. But generally, what do you feel as an artist, and you sell the items you sell in your store mm-hmm. are designed to promote, encourage positive images for kids of color? And
yeah.
Is there another way that maybe non-artists don't think about that art can move the pieces up the board in terms of our being a truly yeah. respectful multicultural society?
Yeah, I think supporting those artists and supporting that art, that's like the first one I would think of. But really exposing yourself, I think, that's a classic, expose yourself to art.
Yeah. It's an old Portland thing.
Yes. But it's true. It's definitely true. And exposing yourself to a variety of art. If you have your one artist that you go to, sometimes that artist is all over the place with their art, and they look at different sources and different inspiration, and that's great. But sometimes that artist is very set on what they're going to depict. Maybe an artist only does birds, and hey, it's great if you only like birds. But get out there, try something different. And if you have people that you're around that like different things, go try some different things, go learn some different, learn about some different cultures and enjoy it. I think the thing about art is that you don't necessarily have to have the same background as the artist to appreciate it.
You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO FM. My name is Eric Bartels. Our guest today has been Kayeen Talton Davis, co-creator of the historic Black Williams Project, an installation of educational art pieces along North Williams Avenue. Kayeen, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Good afternoon, KBOO listeners. We are just a few seconds before noon, and I hope you're having a lovely day. You're listening to KBOO Portland. My name is Tave Fache Drake, and I'm going to be turning it over to our Spanish language programming, which will go on here until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We have Buscando America from noon until 1:30, followed by Fa Radio from 1:30 to 2:30, then from 2:30 to 4, Radio Tonali, and then at 4, we have Democracy Now!, and at 5, KBOO's very own, daily produced, independently produced news. So stick around for all of that, and enjoy the day. It's not raining, it's just cloudy, and we're listening to a little bit of John Coltrane, Softly as in a Morning Sunrise, and it is now officially afternoon, so I'm going to pass it over to Tanya at Buscando, and we have a few messages, and after that, she'll take care of you for the next hour and a half. Stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Water is Life. Youth speak out on the impacts of fracked gas export. On Thursday, November 16th at 6:30 p.m. at Hevera Shalom in Portland. Water